While I was on my sabbatical, I got to spend a good amount of time at Cape Cod, one of my favorite places in the world. I was up there in June, I was again up there in July, and when I was there in July, I decided to get on the ferry one day from Harwich Port, if you know Cape Cod, and take the ferry over to Nantucket to visit Carr and Maxwell. And for those of you new to St. Paul's, Carr has been a part-time associate rector here for a few years, and this year he decided to more fully retire, and will enter into a new stage. He won't be with us in the same way he was, but we've gotten to know Carr very well over the years. And Javier was on vacation at that time, and he was up visiting Carr and Maxwell, and so we made it a day. We planned this day so we could all of us get together in Nantucket. Carr is the, it's called the summer chaplain at the Sconset Chapel in Nantucket. It's not an Episcopal church, it's kind of an interdenominational church, and he's the chaplain. This chapel is only open from May to September. Thus, Carr is there May to September. And so we had a great time together. I've been to Nantucket over the years a few times, but this was an opportunity for Carr to give a tour to both Javier and I, but to places that I've never really been to tell you the truth. One of the places that Carr took us to was the Episcopal Church in Nantucket, incidentally named St. Paul's. St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Nantucket. Nantucket, as you may know, is an island that's just south of the coast of Cape Cod in Massachusetts. And this parish serves that entire island. It's a church that's been there for many years. You can just see it. Even the building is rooted into the area, as is this community. So we're walking through the church, and it's one of those old churches. You can almost smell the holiness of it, you know, those kind of churches. And we're walking around, and I noticed on the wall there was this little light, and there was an icon. When you say the word icon, a lot of times we think of an image that shows us a great saint with a halo around their head. Or many icons are images of Mary, the mother of Jesus, holding Jesus in her arms in many different ways. There's two of them actually in the chapel here at St. Paul's up in our chapel. There's also an icon of Jesus. That's kind of the kind of image we think of when we think of an icon. Icons are designed to be a kind of an accompaniment for prayer. To sit in front of an icon is to accept being sort of invited into a deeper mystery by pondering this image and being drawn in. You know, rather than saying prayers or reading something, you just sit before the icon and let it engage with you. Someone who, it's interesting, they paints an icon. Actually, the literal word is the person who writes the icon. This is an interesting phrase, but for our purposes, who paints the icon. It's different than just painting a picture. The person who is preparing this icon, for them it's a spiritual experience. It usually involves some sort of spiritual time, perhaps fasting, prayer, to engage in writing or painting this icon. So there's a deep sense to it and a deep significance to an icon. Sometimes they have Latin or Greek words in the icon. As we walk closer, though, to this icon at St. Paul's in Nantucket, the image was much different than what you may expect. The image was of Mr. Rogers. That Mr. Rogers. Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, who we know from public television over the years. And on the icon, there were words, gentle, kind, true. Over his head, he had a halo around his head, and he's wearing his sweater with a halo. The word above said gentle, and then it said kind and true. Two things struck me initially is that we found from Carr that Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, and his wife Joanne had a house in Nantucket. And you may know or not know that Fred Rogers is an ordained Presbyterian minister, and that rather than choosing to go into parish work or other kind of pastoral work, he decided to go into public television and have the courage and kind of just this courage, really, to take the risk to do the kind of work that he did, which has touched so many in his work. But it was rooted in that place. So I'm told that when they were at Nantucket, Fred Rogers went to St. Paul's Episcopal Church. That's where he worshiped on Sundays. So what struck me was, number one, here was an icon on the wall of this church of someone whom the people in that congregation knew. And they decided this is someone to make an icon out of and to put it on the wall. It wasn't someone from 1,000 years ago or 800 years ago. It was someone who walked with them. Fred Rogers passed away in 2003, but folks there knew of him. And I thought to myself, you know, at the end of the day, I went back to the Cape and Cape Cod, and I sat with that I was there another week or so after this, and I sat with that and thought about here at St. Paul's, who would be the icons that we would put on our walls? And I thought of some from this parish community who've walked an incredible walk and are icons to us. Just the courage of that community to do that really struck me. But I also began to then think about Mr. Rogers and his ability to engage, be present to. If you ever saw Mr. Rogers, I've Googled him since to kind of bring back these memories. And he started in the late 1960s through the 70s and 80s. And he would always be so attentive and engaging and present to, particularly children. And also in the script, I mean, it was a show with puppets and characters, but there was always this, what's being portrayed was a sense of present to and listening and learning from and modeling gentleness, kindness, truthfulness. Captured in that phrase, remember the great phrase of Mr. Rogers? You can probably say it with me. Won't you be my neighbor? Almost, if you remember the tune, I'm not going to try to do that. Won't you be my neighbor? There was such a calmness and low-keyness about that message and about his life. But this was a man of power. This is a man who was able to change minds and model a way of being that's influenced so many today in his very calm kind of way. Won't you be my neighbor? I look at the gospel reading today, and it's the story of what's described as the rich man and a poor man. It's interesting that's how they're described, the rich man. And then there's this, it says that the rich man lived with his wealth, and it seems lived a rather sumptuous life. He's described as eating his food, as someone would. But there's this poor man outside the door, outside the gates, who's just looking to eat the crumbs that fall from the table, insinuating he's almost fighting with the dogs to get the crumbs to eat. What's left over is what this poor man gets. And it's interesting, that's how the story is told. The rich man is not, he's not sinful because he's rich. There's nothing sinful about being rich. There's nothing sinful about being poor. These are two people in this story. It's a parable, it's a story. And they're depicting their experiences of life. And so I say to myself, what was the sin of the rich man? Because the story says that the poor man goes to with Abraham, insinuation is heaven, and the rich man is in Hades, and he's reaching out to Abraham. It's an interesting image. What is it in this story, in this parable, that leads the rich man to Hades? To me, it seems there was this kind of, I wonder if the rich man was just totally oblivious to the plight of this poor man. Just oblivious. Maybe he didn't even know he was outside the door. Maybe he didn't even deal with the idea that there may be people not eating like he is. That I sit with that, and I'm wondering if that's the sin, if you want to call it. And that parable, I think, so powerfully speaks to us today in our time. Most of the world's population are eating the crumbs from the table. And we sit, you know, I don't know if the word is sumptuous, but we sit in our lives, not maybe just food at the table, but do we sit like the rich man, comfortable, having some privilege, and just oblivious to the person outside the gate who perhaps just wants the crumbs from the table? That gospel reading really touches me very deeply. We're trying to figure, what is that? And how are we, and not as necessarily just individuals, but how are we as a society, how are we as a country, just oblivious at times to those who are eating the crumbs from our tables, from our society, from our culture? And so I thought about this past week, my newsletter article is about Mr. Rogers. You may have read that already. But just those two images, Mr. Rogers, you know, gentle, kind, true, and the image of that rich man, and just oblivious to the needs of others. And so I say to myself, the phrase of Mr. Rogers, "Won't you be my neighbor?" As we live in a time, in a country, where we want to put walls up to keep immigrants from leaving their dangerous neighborhoods in countries south of the border, needing to leave their neighborhoods because of assault, violence, death, danger. And our society says, let's build a wall. I invite us to say, no, won't you be my neighbor? When children at the border are treated by our nation in indespicable ways, indespicable, tasteless ways, may we say, no, won't you be my neighbor? When immigrants, refugees from around the world seek a life here in our country, where even the refugee family that we're trying to welcome to this country a couple of weeks ago were denied getting on the plane. I think it was in Turkey, I'm not sure of that. Denied getting on the plane because they were told by officials, sorry, America's reached this quota, and you've got to stay off the plane. A few years ago, it was 110,000 refugees were scheduled to come into this country. Last year, our country's in a place now where we welcome 30,000. I'm told this year it's going to be 18,000. So I read in the New York Times the other morning. We need to stand up and say, no, won't you be my neighbor? When our LGBTQ brothers and sisters and siblings are treated with danger of violence and bigotry and prejudice and life-threatening kind of threats, we stand and say, no, won't you be my neighbor? When racism continues to raise its ugliness and almost accept it in our society today, we stand and say, no, won't you be my neighbor? Let us stand to be gentle, kind, and true, as Mr. Rogers did. In his being present and aware of the world around him, may we be that kind of transforming presence in our world and go forth from this place in gentleness, kindness, and truthfulness, and use that kind of power to stand up to our world and say, no, won't you be my neighbor? And let us see each other in new ways and bring about this dream that God has for this world.